It's me and Smoothie making trips to the hotel lobby. Smoothie and Equipto, stay hot, stay lit.
Hello and welcome to the Pedal Revolutionary Show, 101.9 CITR. I am David and I am going to be your host tonight as Ifni is not with us today. And I am joined in the studio today by Ryan.
Hello.
Oh, where are you, Ryan? Let's try that again. Hello, Ryan.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
Oh, good. Thank you. There you are. So, we have a on-the-seat of our pants kind of show today. And hopefully you'll enjoy the music and the stuff we have to talk about. So, first of all, I believe we have Franklin on the phone. Franklin.
What up?
Hey, there you are. How are you today?
I'm a little tired, but I'll survive.
Yeah?
Yes.
You got to make more coffee.
Oh, no, I've had enough. I had a friend from out of town, and we cycled all the way to Burnaby yesterday and then back to... the park, Stanley Park, and then back over to Kitts. So it was a nice long riding day for me yesterday.
Oh, really? Well, at least you got all that riding in before the rainy days.
That is for sure. We got a beautiful sunset yesterday at Third Beach. So
really?
Not too shabby.
Was that your friend from New York, correct?
Yeah, Elizabeth.
Right.
Who actually made a film about critical mass in New York called Still We Ride. That everybody should check out. It's free on YouTube. Do a search for Still We Ride or go to stillweridemovie.com.
Oh, yeah. And can you get it anywhere local here in Vancouver?
You know, I don't think so. I destroy it on my website, submedia.tv, but I went to Spartacus yesterday and I didn't see it there.
Okay. Well, I remember talking to you earlier today, and you said that you have some events that people should know about in Vancouver.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. Let's hear them.
If you guys have never heard of Derek Denson, he is an author. He writes about many different subjects, but the environment seems to be the one that he's better known for. And he wrote two tomes recently called Endgames Volume 1 and 2. And in he basically he condensed civilization for the way we've been destroying the planet. So he proposes that we need to basically let go of civilization in order to save our skin and save our butts and save our families and save nature.
Yeah, we had him on the show one time.
Right. You guys had him the last time he was here. And the last time he was here, he spoke in Langara, and over 50 people were turned away because it was so packed. I mean, they completely sold it out. People sitting on the floor, on the aisles, and at some point, fire regulations kicked in, and somebody had to make a decision to, like, turn everybody away. But this time we have a larger venue, the Ukrainian Hall, on 10th of May, and this will happen the 19th of October at 8 p.m. So if you guys are thinking about going, get your tickets early, because this one's going to sell out as well.
I'd imagine so. It's a nice venue, too.
It's an awesome venue. More people should do stuff there, because it's actually nice and cheap, and they're very low maintenance and clean, and they have nice bathrooms, and they have sound system, video projector. So go visit them, and if you can want to throw a show, that's the place to do it.
Awesome. Is there any other events you wanted to talk about?
Any other events? Well, you guys know that tomorrow is the Welcome Back Betty Craswick party.
Oh, you stole my line. I was supposed to talk about that.
Oh, well, you know, maybe you know more about it. I just keep seeing the flyers everywhere, and I know I'm going to be there. And actually, they're supposed to be showing some of my films there tomorrow as well.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yes, I'm very excited about
that. Which films will you be showing?
I did a DVD zine last year called Molotov Number 1, and I just released Molotov version 2.0 this year.
Oh.
And it's all about intellectual property, and I stole some articles from some people who basically encourage that type of behavior, and also a lot of video mashups of basically mixing appropriate footage with pop culture and music to basically create a highly subversive message.
Cool. That sounds awesome. Well, thank you for calling in, Franklin.
You got it.
All right. Take it easy.
Peace.
Peace. Alrighty, well, I'm going to rip into some music here.
Yeah. Mangini Lingini.
On the last Friday of the month, the territorial mating call of the indigenous local cyclist is heard echoing through downtown Vancouver. Thousands of cyclists have once again reclaimed the streets from scared, belligerent motorists. But now, you wonder what is next. The night is still young, and you're feeling a little frisky. After all, there are only so many car tires you can peel in a day. Well, we have the solution. Velofusion Bicycle Dance Party. Burlesque, bands, dancing, DJs, and pirated movies. The last Friday of the month after critical mass. Come one, come all for a little primal rowdiness. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. The Answer Club.
Okay, so you just heard Beltmaker by McKennan Mendelssohn Mainline, and that's an old 60s, 70s band out of Guelph, Ontario. The album is Stink. Good luck finding it. So, as the rains approach, bicyclists out there kind of maybe think about other forms of transportation. The bus being one. I know that's how Ryan and I got here today. And we want to think about maybe more sunnier climates. And so today we're going to talk about Ryan's bicycle trip to Mexico that he took with his partner. And we had actually talked with his partner early in the year when she came back just before him. And we actually interviewed Ryan over the phone briefly. But now he is in the studio to talk about Mexico a little bit more. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, thanks again.
Hey, no problem. So what time frame did your trip take over?
Well, we left at about this time last year, try to escape the rainy winter of Vancouver. We left October 2nd, and I got down to Cabo San Lucas in the tip of Baja California about the middle of February. So it's about a four-month trip.
Oh, yeah. And did you fly down there and bike back up, or did you bike both ways?
I biked from Vancouver down to Mexico. And flew back from there.
Oh, you did fly back?
I flew back, yeah.
Okay. And what was your motivation for Mexico and maybe not cross Canada? Or I guess the time of the year was probably a big factor.
Well, we were thinking about the trip before we picked the time. And I actually have biked across Canada before, so wasn't too keen to do that trip again. I originally wanted to bike up north. Was the next big trip that I had planned. But Kristen, my partner that I went with, she suggested at some point that we bike down south to go to Mexico, and that sounded like fun to me. So we quit our jobs and packed everything up, gave away most of our stuff, and started heading south.
Awesome. Now, did you take the I-5 down? Like, what kind of highways can you take in the States to get there?
We might have been on the I-5 a little bit when we first crossed the border, but no, there's the Highway 101 that you get onto, it runs all the way down the coast from Oregon, or Washington through Oregon and into California. And through Oregon and Washington, it hugs the coast all the way. Once you get just a little bit across the border into California, it splits off into the Highway 1. And that's the one that's right on the coast. We took that the whole way down.
I've driven the 101 quite extensively in my past, and how did you bike that? There are some sections of that are just really crazy. Some sections must be quite challenging.
There were a couple. Most of it is really good, in particular through Oregon and Washington. There was a great big shoulder. We had lots of room. And being the wintertime, the weather wasn't that good, especially up there. So there wasn't a lot of traffic. It got a little busier once we got into California, and the road gets a lot narrower, particularly around places like Big Sur.
Right.
It's a lot windier, and there's not much shoulder. But it was maybe 100 kilometers or less there that it was a little bit sketchy that way.
How was traveling with your partner? That must be good sometimes, not so good other times.
Yeah, it's great. It is challenging sometimes. The trip I did before across Canada was with a couple of friends, and it was a lot different kind of trip. In particular, we were a lot lot more into, you know, stopping and just camping absolutely wherever. And, I don't know, getting into a bit more trouble, stuff like that. Riding a lot more as three guys, all a little bit more aggressive, trying to outdo each other and pushing each other. With Kristen, it was... we stopped a lot more, and we enjoyed the trip and enjoyed each other's company a lot more.
What did you find was the greatest challenge? Or did you fight a lot? Is it just that maybe you're used to going farther distances or just different ideas of what bike touring is?
Yeah, a challenge of it would have been our differences in approach to touring, I think, and me having the experience of a multi-month bicycle trip and living on the road. Kristen didn't have that so much. I adjusted to it pretty quickly, the difference in pace and how far I expected we would travel per day. A lot of that was governed by the weather and the time of year. I was assuming we'd be doing, you know, getting through the United States in about a month or a little bit more than a month and having a lot of time to travel through California. As it turned out, with the short days and the incredibly stormy weather that you had all up and down the coast, even in Vancouver, we were doing at most 50 kilometers a day. So it took us about 3 months before we got to San Diego.
50 kilometers a day is it's definitely light touring. I know my friend Simeon, he can do, you know, 200-300 kilometers kind of days. I mean, that's really pushing it. But
yeah.
Can you tell me something about the bikes that you rode? Were they special or bikes you've always had? Did you buy the bikes for the trip?
Yeah, we talked about doing that. I used the same bicycle that I bought a couple of years ago locally here. It's a Canadian-made bicycle, Da Vinci. It's a touring bike, so it's set up to have racks and loaded up panniers. So I have front and rear bags. The whole rig was maybe 100 pounds or so with all my gear. And Kristen had a hybrid bike that she's just been using for commuting in Vancouver, so it wasn't really set up for touring in the same way that I was doing it. So we opted to get a bob trailer. It's a single wheeled trailer that's great for touring. Some advantages, some disadvantages to it, but it worked out pretty well, all in all. But yeah, we pretty much just went with the bikes that we had.
That's awesome. I know Ifni's always saying that a lot of people think you need a lot of special equipment to do this kind of stuff, but really you don't. And I know a friend of a friend who went across Canada on a bike they got in Value Village, and they slapped those Rubbermaid garbage pails on each side of the rat trap in the back, and that's what they hauled their gear in, and off they went. There's definitely a lot more expensive bikes, like a Surly with a long haul trucker kind of frame, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of custom frames that people get as well.
Absolutely. So interesting.
We saw the whole range, though. I mean, we saw people that looked like they'd just ridden their bike out of the store with all new gear, expensive custom-made frames, brand new racks and panniers and the whole bit, which is pretty much what my setup actually was like when I did the first trip a couple of years ago. We wound up going to Mountain Equipment Co-op and other shops in town, gearing up and spending way too much money. Luckily, I was able to reuse all that stuff in subsequent trips. But we also saw people, the same kind of thing. They had cat food containers bungee to the side that they'd modified into panniers, or just backpacks bungeed onto the back.
The whole range, special.
The whole range from high to low.
What did you guys do for food? I know when we talked to Kristen earlier this year, she was talking about dumpstering for food, and you were growing some stuff on your bike, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's read the book Miles from Nowhere by Barbara Savage. It's a book about her and her husband who are not really cyclists but have this crazy idea that they just want to get out of the busy California high-tech lifestyle kind of thing and cycle around the world. And they talk about a guy they meet who in Oregon who was growing his own sprouts on his handlebars, these really granola kind of munching hippie tourists. And we thought that was hilarious, and we thought it was a great idea. And so that was one of the things we did experiment with, was sprouting food on our bicycles. But being both vegetarians and vegans, there's a lot of limits to what you can eat in restaurants, and bicycle touring eating is one of the, other than sleeping and riding, what you spend most of your time doing. So we did a lot of cooking, so we would stop at supermarkets and buy food and prepare most of our own meals. We'd eat a lot of junk food too, though, and and anywhere we got to that had fries, we would stop and
carb up on fat
and grease, carbs, you bet.
Exactly. Now, Kristen had spoken earlier about the little craft that she was selling along the way. Mm-hmm. Did you do anything to sort of raise money, or just that was a thing between the both of you?
No, I mean, I was thinking about it, but there wasn't really... I mean, my expertise is in computer stuff, mm-hmm. Which is kind of difficult to do on the road. I did wind up getting a laptop and poking around with that, but nothing that was really... Kristen's idea was to sell these crafts on the road, meet people, and maybe raise some money to mm-hmm. help support us on our trip. We set up an online store. We did that to sell some stuff. Because the weather was so bad, there weren't a lot of places we could stop and just sell stuff to people mm-hmm. on the beach. And it was an interesting experience. We started getting emails every time we'd get to a library or get internet access. We would check email, and there'd be a dozen orders for some of her crafts from her website.
That's a pretty cool idea.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well. Sometimes there'd be a few orders there, and I think the way the site worked, a lot of times people would have these crafts pre-made. People would order them, you'd box them up and just ship them out. But Kristen just had all of her supplies there and sort of make them to order. Mm-hmm. So there were a couple times we'd see, oh, shoot, like five people have ordered these things and they take about an hour or two to make, so we check into a motel and craft away and work on the website because we had a travelog that we were documenting our trip with photographs and stuff. And so it gave us a chance to get out of the rain and just do something besides sleeping in the bush all the time.
So this bike ride sounds like it was a bit techie too. You had a laptop with you, websites, and I know you have a travel log with the Google map. Mm-hmm. Do you have any maybe tips for people that are thinking about touring and want to take their laptop with them and you know, sort of update people? Is there any kind of things that maybe you learned that you wish you had done differently or things that worked really well?
Yeah, I've done both. The first trip that I did, I didn't have the laptop, and we were just relying on internet access on the road. And so I would keep a journal and a notebook, write everything every day, get to a library, and you get a half hour to quickly transcribe it all. It was tough to keep up with that. And so the first half of this trip was the same way, and what actually happened here as well, especially going through the States, was it was very difficult to find computers you could actually use. Everybody had free... wireless access at all these coffee shops, but they expect you to bring your own machine, so that's why I picked one up in the Bay Area.
Would you suggest a certain type of laptop, or like, I know you had a pretty special laptop, but was it durable? Do you want to talk about that a bit?
I built a foam case for it. Mm-hmm. It's a really thin 1 pound laptop. It was mm-hmm. light, which was the thing I was looking for. It's a trade-off between having it light, so you don't want to haul too much gear, mm-hmm. and having something durable, like a Toughbook or something like that, that'll take a beating. It survived the whole trip through California and through the desert of Mexico, and it wasn't until I got back to Vancouver, and a couple days later, I smashed it up and broke it.
That's how it goes sometimes, eh?
Yeah. But it's tough to make recommendations. It depends. I mean, I've seen people with a lot heavier, more durable laptops, and on a bike, you can get away with hauling a lot of gear, and... Mm-hmm. The biggest thing is battery life, I think, and how much you can find power. In hindsight, doing it again, I think I'd like to have less tech. We just got back from a short trip from Williams Lake down to here. It was just a week trip, but I mean, I had a GPS on this trip too. It was quite a tech trip. And on this last one, we didn't have anything at all. Like, I forgot my headlamp, and we didn't even have a flashlight or anything that took batteries. I don't have a bike computer anymore, and it's really nice. I didn't even know what time it was, and I didn't have to worry about whether all my batteries were charged or where I was going to get access for this. You can just be out there traveling. And,
mm-hmm. There's a lot of interesting cities along the way. You mentioned one, Big Sur, and I'm a big fan of Big Sur myself. Is there any particular cities you really enjoyed, you know, wish you could go back to?
There's a few. I mean, Portland, it was the first time I went to Portland, mm-hmm. and we spent about a week there. Fortunately, we had friends that we could stay with and mm-hmm. and get shown around and saw a lot of things there. Always eager to go back there. Arcata was a pretty neat town, and we were fortunate enough to... We were outside a bicycle shop just getting some repairs, and we'd met up with another couple of cyclists, one from Pennsylvania and one from Montana, mm-hmm. and we were touring with them for a couple of days, and we were all there getting repairs, and as so often happens, somebody just they see you out there, and they know you're traveling, and they know you're from far away, and this guy had been done some touring himself and invited us to come stay at his place. And his partner worked at the recycling facility there, and they just had all this. He was getting his rent paid for free for just taking care of his landlady's shop, and she just had metal cars, skulls, bones, all this stuff everywhere, and he was just sorting it out for her. And but yeah, it was a university town. There were a couple of cooperative bicycle organizations there, and it was a good
town. That's an Arcata, right?
That was Arcata.
Did you get to see the city square there, where there's that big patch of like lawn right in the middle, and it's like there's all the shops squared around it?
I didn't actually see that there. No,
that's where I hung out for a bit, and it's, I don't know, that's not America. It's like, yeah, you could cut it out and put it somewhere else. It's just out of this world.
Yeah, but as far as places go, it's really difficult. It all depends who you see there, what kind of experience you get from it.
That's true.
And so yeah, I mean, Arcata, I didn't actually see much of the town, but just the few people we met there and the time we spent was great. Just get that kind of feeling from a place.
What did you get into any sketchy towns or situations that kind of bothered you, or was it pretty clean sailing all the way?
No, that's something people always ask, especially going through big places like Los Angeles, and then all the horror stories we heard before getting down to Baja California, and all the bandidos or whatever crazy stuff you're likely to see down there, and I can't believe you're doing that on a bike.
Yeah.
But honestly, everybody we met and every interaction we had with anybody was positive. I can't remember anything negative, except for, you know, just the traffic and the craziness of biking through Los Angeles.
I can imagine. So the cars were a bit of a problem.
Cars were a problem in L.A. and, you know, through Big Sur a little bit, and then all the way down the Baja.
Really?
They're really bad there. Yeah, as soon as I crossed the border, things totally changed.
Yep.
The road gets a lot narrower. It's well paved. It's a good strip of pavement they have all the way down from Tijuana to Cabo San Lucas. But it's all road maggots, RVs from British Columbia, the majority of them. And they go in these caravans. Some of them literally had 25 RVs. They travel all together. They're on a guided tour. Some of them have rented their vehicles. Some of them own them. But I guess that's the fun, safe way to tour Mexico.
Oh, I guess so. It's I've never even heard of that. Now, I know Kristen left the trip early. Did she make it to Mexico? I don't remember the interview.
No. She got as far as San Diego. She was offered a job in Los Angeles at a center that in her field that she wanted to work at for a long time, and it was just an opportunity she didn't want to give up. So we talked about it for a while, and she decided to fly back from there. Fortunately, there we had an amazing host who helped us coordinate all that and just make that whole transition and separation and my planning of going on solo into Mexico a lot easier.
Yeah. Was that a hard decision to make, to separate like that? Did you think about just stopping the trip or?
Yeah, I did. It was bittersweet. I mean, I really wanted to get to Mexico, and especially after investing so much time and difficulty getting to San Diego, just to have it across the border. I knew if I didn't, I would be kicking myself for that opportunity. And Kristen totally understood that. And it was a tough decision, but yeah, I think it worked out well. And we made the right one.
Awesome. Well, let's take a break and listen to some music.
Back, please, back.
My wife says I work too hard. She may be right. The days certainly are filled with the demands and tensions of a high-powered job. But I've got an escape hatch. I call it my Cadillac Hour. It starts when I slide into my new Fleetwood Brougham and discover all over again just how accommodating my Cadillac really is.
I was riding my bike down the street dark at night when I looked and I saw there was a certain kind of light and warmth in the houses that were there all around. But in the city, man, it's killing me.
My wife says I work too hard.
And when I get up in the morning and go to sleep at night, I try hard to convince myself that everything's all right, that everything that's tucked beneath the sheets is safe and warm and sound. But this city, man, it's killing me.
but I've got an escape hatch.
Your brain has a ping-pong ball. Too many choices is no choice at all. My mind is shifting gears like a pearl watch we could roam. And I wanna have a place to call home.
My Cadillac Hour.
Too hard to say hello. Nice. Where are the restaurants that serve tofu and rice? They've got big black cockroaches and lots of head lice. Yeah, the city.
I call it.
Man, it's killing me.
My Cadillac Hour.
Places I could live. I see nature a whole lot. But lacking a car, I think I'll just stay here and rot. Can't make me enough money, must be some kind of plot. In this city, man, it's killing me.
My Cadillac out.
And your brain acts like a ping pong ball. Too many choices, there's no choice at all.
Got an escape hatch.
Some separation in the city, not a wall. In the country, those walls are not important at all. How the hell can I get out of here when I can't afford a car? In the future, looks bleak like black tar.
The plush power seats, the automatic climate control. The stereo AM/FM radio that seeks out soothing music. And, of course, the kind of smooth, relaxing ride that belongs to Cadillac.
And that was Negative Land, and the song is City Man, which Ryan is definitely not a city man. On the phone right now, we have the one and only Ifni LaChance, and she is actually going to do a traffic report, which is very rare and odd. Ifni, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, and we can hear you.
That was a really weird song.
Well, Ryan brought it.
I'm glad to hear it was Negative Land, because I was feeling really disoriented, and then after I'm like, oh, that's why. How are you guys today?
We're good.
I'm doing well. How
yeah,
are you?
I'm pretty good. I wanted to provide the bike traffic report today because I can't be in the studio. As you guys know, it has been raining off and on today, and it looks like, for the time being where I am anyway, the rain isn't directly pouring in from the sky, although it looks like it's going to start again pretty soon. I'm actually up at in Mount Pleasant right now. I'm up at Mount St. Joseph, and there's some pretty heavy gurney traffic here at the moment. There's a lot of wheelchairs heading up and down the aisles. It's dinner time, so things are starting to settle down a little bit, and that is Mount St. Joseph Hospital. So I haven't seen a lot of bicycles in the hospital, but I do know that there are a couple of them parked outside.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, so that's how things are looking here. I can see Kingsway, and Kingsway, I don't see a single bike on Kingsway, which is probably for the best, because Kingsway, unless you are a hardcore video game-style traffic rider... Hey, I see a bike. Oh, cool. I do see a bike. Oh, okay, so he's got... he's wearing shorts. That's fantastic.
He's hardcore,
yeah,
like you said.
And he's wearing a nice, brightly colored yellow vest. He looks like he's a pro commuter, which is what one might expect to see on Kingsway, because, as I mentioned, Kingsway is for commuters of all kinds, both motorized and non. And if you do ever find yourself on Kingsway on a bike, you may want to either take the lane or make sure that you're in the parking lane and avoiding all doors. But, yeah, there's certainly a lot of traffic, and the cars look perturbed, as usual. But anyway, so that's the scene from where I stand.
Awesome. And do wheelchairs count as, like, bicycle type? Like, is there a kinship there?
Well, I mean, this is the question. If a bicycle is indoors, does it count as bicycle traffic as well? Because, of course, the wheelchair traffic that I'm referring to is actually happening indoors here in the hospital. I would say yes. I think certainly we're kindred spirits. I mean, a lot of wheelchairs do also have pneumatic tires. From what I understand from folks who have been in wheelchairs for a long time, they do eventually, they do tell me that they find more help at bicycle repair shops as far as fixing tires than they do from wheelchair repair shops, because, of course, wheelchair repair shops tend to be way out in the boonies and a little bit inaccessible by wheelchair. So, yeah. The ones who have learned to patch their own wheelchair tires have done so under the instruction of bicycle mechanics.
There you go.
That's kind of cool solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be wondering why I am in the hospital, and I just want to clarify if for folks who are listening, if they can put their radio on the windowsill and maybe turn it outwards and turn up the volume just so that everyone gets this loud and clear. I was not riding a bicycle when I had my altercation with the ground. Oh, I see another bicycle, by the way, and he's got a plastic bag hanging from his handlebars. He's coming towards the hospital, actually. That's interesting. And he's eating something. So for anyone who may be tempted to ride with a plastic bag hanging from your handlebars, don't do it. Make sure it's securely fastened and far enough away that it won't catch in your spokes. I know more than one person who has gone flying over their handlebars because they've gotten a plastic bag stuck in their front wheel. So on that, just as a side note. Anyway.
Or a mattress.
Pardon me?
Or a mattress. I know somebody that endowed on a mattress.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds really difficult.
Well, the man's sitting right here with me right now.
It's pretty easy when the mattress goes into the front wheel to endo over the handlebars.
And this would have to be, I would think, on a fixie as well, because it's not, you like to shoot high, right, Ryan?
Yeah, it was actually on this particular ride.
Wow, excellent. Did you happen to fall on the mattress?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
Fell on the bike.
Oh. You should try to fall on the mattress next time.
I'll keep that in mind.
That's my Thanks. Advice. I just wanted to say that I to dispel any rumors that you know my bicycle was totally innocent and I was not riding a bike at the time. My opponent was not riding a bike. The ground was not riding a bike. Gravity was riding a pitchfork.
Were there any bikes around?
There were some bikes around, but it was like they were totally not involved.
Okay.
They're totally innocent. Everybody, my mom, my dad, all my friends were like, oh, my God, you know, you were riding a bike, weren't you? What were you doing now? And I'm like, no, I wasn't riding a bike. I was wrestling. So just so that everybody knows, I hurt my head, and I'm in the hospital, and I'm getting out today. They took out most of my tubes.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I only have, like, one tube left. And
is that the one you go to the bathroom in?
What's that?
Is that the one you go to the bathroom in?
No, I didn't need one of those.
Oh, okay.
No, it's the arm one.
Oh, okay.
And if it was going to be any longer in here, I was going to start growing food on my gurney. but I don't think that that's necessary. But it's been quite nice to just kind of kick back and relax. The hospital's lovely, and I just wanted to say thanks to everybody who's been visiting and sending notes here via carrier pigeon and chocolates and flowers. And the Americans who came up for last weekend were so kind as to take up a collection for my hospital bill. It's so ignorant and yet so charming. But anyway.
You had some things you wanted to read us, correct?
Yeah, I did, actually. I have had the opportunity to catch up on a little bit of reading while I was here. Some friends dropped off a couple of bicycle books, and which just makes me, of course, miss cycling. I'm going to have to take it easy on bicycle for the next couple of weeks. But anyway, I read a little bit of a piece. It's from a book called Need for the Bike. It's by a gentleman named Paul Fournel, and he's French. And so I will do my best to just read this little piece, because as we're getting into the fall, the smells and are starting to come out of all of the trees and everything. So here we go. It's called Smells. It says, biking smells good. In the Haute Loire, it smells of pine and moss, touches of new mown hay. Here and there, a spot of cow. Sometimes in Hamlet, a cowshed makes its presence known, but also the smell of open windows, beef stew, wax, detergent, roast chicken, thrown over a line, sheets and blankets, a night odor quickly lost in the blue of the sky. The summer itself has a very strong smell. You pass through pockets of sweet-smelling heat when the road cuts through a wheat or rye field, where you come out of a forest and enter a clearing. The heat activates the smell of the resin and brings up out of the road the smell of tar, the profound background to all the summer smells. A great concert takes place just after a rain, when the road surface is still steaming in the storm and the deep odors of the world ascend from the earth. The sun jumps back, dries your jersey, and draws out of your own body the aroma of wool and salt. The smell of water gradually dissipates, and for a quarter of an hour, you feel as if you're riding inside a truffle. For a long time, these were the smells of biking for me. When you ride fast and lose your breath, they merge and swirl in an ever-changing rainbow. Since I've expanded my cycling domain, my range has grown to include the smell of fish, sand, and flowers in California, the smell of the wood fires of chalets in Austria, the smell of lavender and thyme in Provence, the smell of salt in Ireland, the smell of great damp autumn undergrowth of Paris, and the fine, fresh, pure smell of the high mountains. And there you go.
Wow, it was beautiful.
It's wonderful, yeah.
It's a nice little piece, and it kind of struck me a little bit because I unfortunately have lost my sense of smell.
No.
So, but I remember it very well, and I may yet again regain it. So.
You got to do those nose exercises.
I'm working on my nose exercises. So, anyway, I was thinking maybe you want to go to some music. I would love to hang on here.
Yeah, not a problem. Is your phone okay? Because I hear some beeping, and you're not going to lose batteries on us, are you?
That's my tubes.
That's your what?
That's my tubes.
That's your tubes beeping. Okay, well, I'll lamp some music for you. Hang on a second.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And that was a band called Mountain and the song Sitting on a Rainbow. And some of you people probably know Mountain from their one-hit wonder Mississippi Queen, which was back in the day. Anyways, Ifni, I heard that we lost you. Did we got you back again? Hello? Ifni, hello? Okay, I guess we lost her there. Ifni, if you can hear us, please give us a ring back, and hopefully we can talk a little bit more. But for the meantime, I guess we can go back to our conversation with Ryan about the trip, about his trip to Mexico. I know my father was definitely always telling me, you know, Mexico is a dangerous place to travel, but you could probably say something different about that.
Mexico is a big country, and there's a lot of different parts of it. So I think that's statements like that seem to be like saying that traveling in the United States is dangerous. Depends where you are. It depends, you know, what you're doing. But all through Baja, it's a fairly touristy part of Mexico. A lot of road travelers. I saw only two other bicycle tourists, both heading north. But as far as the crime that I was warned about, even from people who lived in San Diego just across the border from Tijuana, a lot of people in San Diego will go down to Tijuana all the time for breakfast, something like that. The other half the people we talked to had never crossed the border, lived there their whole life and just had no interest in it or were too afraid of it. But all of the locals there and were incredibly friendly and had seemed to have a lot of respect for somebody who was traveling in the way that I was. And helped me out, and they would offer places to stay and food, and were just more than welcoming, and I had no problems at all.
Interesting. Well, I think Ifni made it back. Maybe we can revisit that in a minute. But Ifni, are you there?
I am.
Oh, good. There you are.
I'm pretty hard to kill off.
It's true. It's true.
How is it going over there anyway? It's a hard job, eh? Being a revolutionary.
It's true, and to just keep thinking of new questions, but it's good that I have Ryan here because he's a fountain of information about bicycle touring, and really awesome talking to him. So
right on.
You,
and he's a fantastic cook.
Yes.
As well.
Yes. I know he's been getting you food and getting me food last week, so I have to agree.
I've been getting two dinners a day. It's been really great. from the community keeps bringing me an extra dinner. I don't know. Did I look like I was wasting away? I guess so. And the best thing that one of the best things that somebody brought me, actually Ryan brought over. He brought a shortwave radio, so I was able to actually kind of hear part of the Pedal Revolutionary show today before you guys put me on. But it was mixed in with Waiting for the Weekend.
Oh.
It was playing on some other station. It was because I'm not high enough to get good reception, even though I'm on Mount Pleasant. I don't know. But anyway, so I'm glad to be back, and I'm going to leave you guys to the rest of the show soon. But before I do that, I wanted to just do a little bit of other reading from this book, which I just devoured over the last day. It's interesting now because we're getting into that season that for some people they put their bikes away, which always makes me sad. And for others, they do continue to ride through the winter. We're starting to get into that season where people are starting to kind of pull out all their winter gear from last year. And if anybody has good tips on how they keep their toes dry and keep the back of their necks dry and all that and keep their gear dry, if you'd like to send those to pedalrevolutionary@gmail.com, we will maybe start some kind of bringing out tips from the community about how to weather the water that we're getting into now, because of course we are lucky enough that in Canada most folks have a real trial when it comes to riding throughout the winter, but in Vancouver we're a little bit spoiled. Mm-hmm. Another piece here from Need for the Bike by Paul Fresnel, which was translated from the French by a gentleman named Ellen Stokel. There's another little piece here called Cycle Thoughts, and hit me as kind of interesting for this time of year. It starts off, every year when I'm in France, we organize, on the occasion of the Saint-Étienne Book Festival, a hill climb with Jacques Plaine, who's the master of the proceedings and who rides a bike when he's not running marathons. This race, which they've christened the Autumn Sun's Climb, and which takes place, depending on the year, in the rain, the wind, the snow, and sometimes even the sun, has become a great get-together. On the line, there are writers, artists, former champions, kids from the local cycling school, and old-timers. I've seen Pierre Bern, at the age of 94, start off, tangling with those newfangled gadgets, toe clips. Jacqueline has chosen the Pilat climb up the Croix de Chauboret as the route. I'm not too crazy about the course profile. It's true that since the idea is to climb it cold with the spigot wide open, there's little time left for savoring things. Nevertheless, it's a very uneven course and it hurts your legs. Once the clock has stopped at the summit, the game consists of coming back down from village to village, from prize wine to hot wine, from sausages to tarts, finally arriving in town in a euphony indifferent to the brisk air and the occasional snowflake. That part, by the way, would be my favorite coming back down. My friend Yvette had the good idea of absentmindedly asking me to write a short article for Le Progrès on the occasion of each running of the race. For technical reasons, this article has to be submitted at 1 o'clock p.m. Given the time needed for racing, plus the time for showering and putting on a clean shirt, I'm forced to write it on the climb itself. Kind of interesting. So he goes on to say that he starts writing this article on the write-up, and he says, there are a lot of walker poets who write their verses to the rhythm of their feet. The radar, the robots, cyclist poets are less numerous, it seems, but that's due to inattentiveness, since the bike is a good place to work for a writer. First, he can sit down. Then he's surrounded by windy silence, which airs out the brain and is favorable to meditation. Finally, he produces with his legs a fair number of different rhythms, which are so much music to verse and prose. The difficulty, however, lies in the fact that on the autumn sun's climb, I try to climb quickly while writing. I'm short of breath, and my prose is choppy. I suffer from reduced lucidity, and my position keeps me from seeing everything. Deaf, blind, and out-of-breath reporter. Peaceful ramble days are perfect for text brewing. I leave with a sentence, an idea, and I spin it around for a few hours. I've come home with a story almost finished, an article, the end of a piece. When I write this way, I can tell whether it's headwind prose or tailwind prose. On a bike, I love working with paradoxical thoughts, thoughts that appear maladapted. Thinking methodically about Proust, about Queneau, for example, about Calder, about Howard Hawks, reciting Le Pelican de Jonathan by Jacques Roubaud, reconstructing What a Man by Georges Perec, and Oh, L'Ostrogoth by Jacques Jouet. I love experimenting with the distortions that effort causes texts and reflections to undergo, what the open air brings to them, what sweat oxidizes in them, what they bring to my cycling performance. These are displaced thoughts, and I can never know precisely whether their methodical exercise influences the steadiness of my pedaling, or the steadiness of my pedaling influences the methodical side of my reflection. Often these thoughts will be crazier, freer than they would be in a living room. Less presentable, too, sometimes pitted, sometimes shaken by sudden accelerations, unforeseen shortcuts, surprise breakaways. They have nothing to do with the chit-chat topics I might share with my cycling friends. These are the thoughts and exercises of a solitary cyclist. On occasion, they've served as preparation for writing. I can't determine precisely the instant in which my thought escapes its object to become a thought of pure effort. The moment the rhythm speeds up, the moment the slope becomes steep, the moment fatigue gets the upper hand, thought doesn't fade away before the animal spirits. On the contrary, it's reinforced and diffused throughout my entire body, becoming thigh thought, back intelligence, calf wit. This unconscious transformation is beyond me, and I only become aware of it much later, when the lion's share of effort is over and thought flows back, returning to what is ordinarily considered its place.
Wow.
Kind of neat.
Beautiful.
So, this is what I would like to propose. Since we are getting into a season where people may be spending a little bit more time indoors cleaning their bikes or just spending a little time in front of a fire, there aren't as many events happening in the wintertime, and we have to accept the inevitable. It is getting to be wintertime very soon. It's just around the corner. I'd like to propose a writing contest. And I like the line where he mentions he can tell the difference from when he looks at his work later, he can tell if it's headwind prose or tailwind prose. So building on that idea, I'd like to propose that folks submit pieces that are either headwind related or tailwind related. It doesn't have to be literal. Or they can also be related to water, since that is the wall against which we are facing. So we'll call it the Tour de Scribbles, and you can submit your work to pedalrevolutionary@gmail.com, and we'll kind of run the contest throughout the winter. So if you want to write a haiku or a short story or a play or anything you want, no limits on length. When we start seeing buds on the trees next spring, we'll draw the contest to a close. So if you want to get started and start submitting them, we will be bringing them out as we get them in.
That sounds fantastic.
Does that sound good?
That sounds awesome.
Right on.
All righty.
Well, thank you for letting me do the bike traffic report today.
Hey, no problem.
I know it was a bit unorthodox.
Yeah, you know. So we will be seeing you on the streets again soon?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, you have a good day.
Thank you very much. If you see me on the streets, I will be wearing a helmet for the time being. For those folks who are out there, a word of advice, if you have suffered a concussion, even if it's not bike-related, like me, you may want to consider wearing a helmet just for time being because, of course, concussions are cumulative and you need to give your brain time to rest and get better.
Absolutely.
The other thing I would say is that for folks who do get a concussion or a head injury, I'm no doctor, I'm a lawyer, certainly you may want to consider using vervain, which is a kind of tea that apparently is very good for the healing process for head injuries. And when you get admitted to ER, ask them to test for your sense of smell. It's a really important test, and they oftentimes forget it. There you go. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much, Ifni.
Thank you, David.
Alrighty.
Thank you, Ryan.
It was good to hear from you, Ifni.
Okay, you guys take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So I think that wraps up one of our shows, and Ryan, hopefully, you know, we'll talk a bit more sometime down the road about your trip. It's such a huge trip. There's a lot to talk about. And is there a website somebody could read about some of your trips still, or is that down now?
No, it's still up. You can see our travelogue and photos at yeski.ca, yeske.ca.
Awesome. Alrighty. Well, thank you very much, Ryan.
Thanks, David.
Bye-bye. It's chilling through my bones. It's our pity.